Welcome to UBS On Air. Hi everyone, Dan Cassidy here. So on today's podcast, we are excited to feature for you a special conversation on the muni bond markets with UBS Asset Management. I do have on the line with me Ebbie Gary. Ebbie is the head of Asset Management's Municipal Portfolio Strategy, as well as Anthony Liotti, head of Asset Management's Fixed Income SMA Advisory Group, as well as Oleg Morodikin, head of Municipal Credit. I know the team has a very interesting conversation in store for us today, so Anthony Liotti, let me go ahead and pass it over to you.
Great. And a special thank you, Dan, and a welcome everyone at UBS for this special update on the muni markets from asset management. As Dan mentioned, I'm joined by two of my great counterparts in asset management, Debbie, who's been a 30-year veteran in the business and then coming up on a 25-year and a silver anniversary. So congrats on that, Debbie. And then, of course, Oleg, who's been with the firm for 10 years in the credit department on the municipal bond side. So for this call, what we're going to do is have a little bit of an open chat roundtable where we'll each present on a specific topic that we feel are on most of our advisors, financial advisors, and clients' minds. We're going to talk about how the muni market is faring through these extremely challenging times. We'll talk about the election, the Fed, portfolio positioning, and perhaps most importantly, with Oleg, we'll talk credit. And so what I'm going to do is I'll start off and with the baton in my hand, I'll pass it to Ebbie and ask your first question of the day. So Ebbie, the muni market, like all fixed income markets, have had an historic year for a number of reasons. Let's talk about where we are from a fundamental technical standpoint. And then if you could walk us through what we are expecting from the Fed in terms of any financial support this year and what the impact that may have on the markets as we close out 2020 or if it comes into 2021. So thanks, Ebbie.
Thanks, Anthony, and good morning all who are listening in. I think the key thing is obviously as we've gone through the rise and continuation of the pandemic, you saw some pretty big volatility in municipals, but more importantly, let's see where we are here as of today. Basically, munis have underperformed here, and a big reason it has underperformed is because of the concern on credit, which Oleg will talk to later on. But I do want to tell you sort of what's transpired here. Just to give you, rates have come down, obviously, with the economic slowdown. The front end of treasuries, think 2 to 5 years, is down about 140 basis points year to date. The 10-year is down about 120, and the long end of treasuries is down almost 100. Munis have not fared as well. While they are down and the yield curve has steepened, munis has steepened just as much. The front end is down about 80 basis points. 10 years for munis is down about 50, and the long end is down about 30 to 35. So an underperformance. So where does that put us? We have seen some pretty strong demand in the front end of municipals, think inside of 5 years, but less so in the longer end. And what that has done is AAA munis, which we use as a barometer versus treasuries to tell us how we think the market is doing and how it is positioned, is basically at about 100% of treasuries. So AAA munis are basically at the same yield as treasuries inside of 5 years. Once you get longer than that and the demand has dropped, we start to get significantly cheaper. 10 years are about 130%, and the long end is about the same. So we are significantly cheaper and steeper. This has been driven by the concerns from a credit perspective. As you know, the two sort of poster children of credit problems, MTA and Illinois, has put also some pretty big concerns on how is this pandemic help hit municipal credit. Again, I'll let Ola go into that. But what it has done is put us into a position that we're pretty flat through 5 years in curve slope, and then we get pretty steep out to about 20 years and then flatten back out again. I think what's very interesting in this and where we're positioned and what this has done is because the market is so focused on purely just yield and income, they lose sight of what the total return can be. And one of the things that's, I think, very interesting in how we are looking at portfolios is there are selective spots on the yield curve where the principal return due to roll down, if interest rates don't change, principal return is definitely double what the actual income is. So really think about that. There are parts of the yield curve where the principal appreciation due to roll down is double what the income is. And this is, again, an area that we're taking an advantage of. As far as the Fed is concerned, I think, you know, everyone gets a lot of questions on what is the Fed going to do? Are they going to support, et cetera? I think the key to this is who knows? We are in information and data gathering mode, just as Jay Powell is. And no one is, you know, certain of, there seems to be another wave coming through here. The second wave, as they're calling it, and seems to be happening in Europe, has a potential to happen here in the U.S. And what transpires. So I think we're clearly looking at here is the next few months are, from a pandemic standpoint, is what transpires. Is there a vaccine? How will it get distributed? All of that is unknown. So to make guesses, and that's, I think, the right verb here, on what is going to transpire is just that. The Fed is in data gathering mode, just as we are. Matter of fact, we just had our investment meeting this morning prior to this call, and that's what came out. And another part of it is the election and what transpires. And not only is who is elected president, but what happens with the Senate is also pretty key. So that coupled with we've seen enormous supply in the last couple of months as issuers were getting in to the market with these low rates prior to the election, which has some could have some volatility to it. And we want to see what happens if the – which we believe that the amount of issuance will go down going forward. So to us, where we see from the market itself is that we are generally cheap to treasuries from an historical standpoint. That is more pronounced in the longer end of the market, and we are steeper than I believe we should be. That coupled with there will be a lot of data that will be consumed from the election over the next month and then about the pandemic over the next 6 months. So this is what we are doing from a portfolio standpoint. As many of you have heard me talk before, is take from the market what it gives you. There are some selective spots, like I said, where the total return is very strong, where we're overweighting. But we're really playing it very close to the vest here from an overall market standpoint. So with that, that's sort of what we're seeing. What I'd like to do, Anthony, let me kind of throw it back to you. you spent a lot of time talking with FAs and their clients and many of the participants out there. What are you hearing out there? I mean, made the estimate that we're seeing a lot of demand up front because there are concerns about, you know, the credits of municipals, et cetera. What are you hearing out there?
Well, definitely much of the same. I think it falls upon, you know, I'd say three key areas of what clients are saying, and that is, I'd say they're adjusting for risk. They're clearly adjusting for yield expectations. And then lastly, I'd say, again, what you kind of summed up is they're concerned about the election, the virus, and, of course, you know, what the impact on the election of taxes might be to their own portfolios and how they should be properly positioning. You know, what I would say is, you know we grew up, you know, this bond market is definitely a lot different than the bond market we grew up in. You know, I started in the early 90s, and the only question that clients asked their advisors before buying a muni security was what is the insurance that the bonds have? And boy, have times changed. And so with this change, you know, we're adjusting for risk has changed. And I would say that what we are adjusting and incorporating these changes in the client risk parameters to our portfolios and vice versa. You know, municipal bonds as part of a client's portfolio have always been about preservation in principle. And I think now more than ever, clients want even higher levels of credit quality within their accounts as they continue to grow, you know, a bit more skeptical on the ability for these lower rated issuers to survive due to concerns over the virus. I think that this market continued to be about the haves and the have-nots, and this will be the way probably for the foreseeable future, you know, which is, in my opinion, you know, it speaks volumes for the need for an extended team of professionals, you know, constantly looking and assisting, you know, with these important investment decisions, you know, now more than ever before. What we've seen this year is there's been a very large spread and returns, you know, of the gap between investment grade and high yield. And I clearly think that that highlights plainly that clients and professional investors are extremely timid on taking on additional credit risk right now. I don't think that, you know, we'll see a significant improvement in the lower rated, you know, market until we see a bit more strength in this consumer led recovery. Secondly, I would say that clients are obviously, you know, always looking to maximize yield, you know, while taking on, you know, the least amount of risk. And the problem in today's market is that, you know, until they feel comfortable with the direction of, you know, what we're seeing about, you know, the virus and or the possible outcome of the election, they are being very conservative. And with interest rates globally, not just here in the States, but globally remaining very low, and they've been that way for a while, clients continue looking for new ways to combat this issue, you know, without looking to step out too much on the duration or maturity spectrum. And so, as you mentioned earlier, you know, it's very true. You know, we are seeing more aggressive flows into our shorter end solutions in attempt to sort of, you know, hunker down and wait for more market clarity. I'd say these clients are you know more comfortable with lower rates, even though, you know, these are really low rates of yield over the short intermediate term, and just sort of wait and pause and look to reinvest in some of those longer term securities or solutions, I should say, if and when rates move significantly higher to a level that they feel compensates them for that extension and duration risk, right? Now, on the flip side, we still do have a population of clients that are open to extending duration a bit more in order to take advantage of just simply, you know, yield maximization. You know, and as I mentioned earlier, you know, they're okay with taking on duration risk, but they don't want to take on credit risk, right? That's where even we, as we talked about just on our call this morning, right, it's where we could see that next shoe drop isn't interest rate risk. It could be really credit risk from some of those credits that you mentioned earlier. These clients of ours who are taking a little bit more duration risk, those are the ones that are saying, look, they're saying, you know, the old adage of don't fight the Fed could probably be, you know, so much, you know, so true right now more than ever before. So, yeah, why not just move out a little bit in the curve until things, you know, and the Fed really has to make a significant change to rates. Lastly, I would say indecision because of the unknown, like you said, you know, which is, you know, there's, you know, I don't want to get too much in the election as I want to ask Oleg about that, but many investors, you know, were expecting to see perhaps a Democratic win if you look at the polls. But also many investors look at what happened in 2016. And so they're being very cautious, I'd say a bit more flat-footed in terms of lacking any severe investment conviction in the market. And I think this will only change until we see greater levels of clarity on both, you know, the election, the political picture, and then the virus. And so I'll stop there. I'll grab this baton and I'll take it over to Oleg. All right, Oleg. So, I would say my question, you know, for our audience is this. You know, we have dealt with a lot of shocks in the media market before. You know, we've seen Meredith Whitney, the taper tantrum, a financial banking crisis. But I don't think any of us ever thought that we'd have to be evaluating credit due to a pandemic, right, or you. So let's talk about the state of the overall credit markets and municipals. Where are the areas of strength and where are the areas of weakness where we are a bit more concerned right now?
Absolutely, Anthony. It's the pandemic was highly unprecedented. We're dealing with a market that has about 50,000 issuers, both state and local governments, as well as revenue-based issuers, including healthcare, higher ed, airports, mass transit agencies, all of which have, to a certain extent, been impacted by the pandemic. So when we talk about state and local governments that rely heavily on tourism and your economically sensitive revenue streams like sales taxes and income taxes, they saw the biggest impact during the pandemic in terms of what the impact was to their bottom line. It's beginning to be clearer now in terms of states and locals that have built up reserves during the longest period of economic expansion in recent history. Those have fared better during the pandemic, and we're now beginning to see some winners and losers. But I should mention that for many issuers, the real long-term impact is only beginning to appear now as they begin their new fiscal year 2021 under what we call the new norm. And what I mean is the new norm is primarily driven by the social distancing guidelines and how these guidelines are changing the behavior and habits, resulting in material changes to the municipal credit landscape. You know, some of the figures that we're looking at are those cities located in major metropolitan areas. They've only seen 25% of the workforce return back to office. That's a pretty troubling number for the commercial real estate and the overall economy within those areas. And that 25% figure is just an average. There's a range of about plus minus 10 percentage points, with some cities like New York only seeing about 12 to 15% of the workforce returning back to the office. And that's explained by the fact that the city, such as New York, is a vertical city where it's a little bit more difficult to invite employees back to work in the high rises and those kind of factors. Airports are still operating at a 35% capacity compared to what we saw last year. Certainly not enough to stay in business without making some significant changes, without a rescue package that has been requested from the federal government. We saw same types of statistics from mass transit entities like LA MTA, New York MTA. They're all operating at roughly 35% of what we saw during the same period last year. Certainly not enough to stay afloat without significant cuts in services and or a rescue package from the federal government. When we look at hotel occupancy rates, they are surprisingly high, 48.6%, or I should say they're much higher than I would have expected them to be. But it's still a severe drop from what we saw last year, about a 31.7% drop from what we saw last year. So as you can see, every single sector has been to a certain extent impacted by the pandemic. Our focus during the pandemic was to add exposure to essential service providers. What I mean is your electric utilities, your water sewer utilities, that really do not see a swing in revenues even during the worst periods of recession. We have also focused on issuers that are large and liquid with significant reserves, and we've seen those issuers do much better during the pandemic. And on the other end, we've reduced or eliminated exposure to issuers which we felt would be impacted the most and would have a tough time recovering from the pandemic. The figures that I mentioned before, we are seeing a significant improvement since the height of the pandemic, but I would like to reiterate that we're just at the beginning of the cycle where we start to see the real long-term impact on the municipal issuers. Thanks, Anthony. I'll pass it back to you.
Yeah. All right, so I'm going to throw one more at you if you don't mind.
Sure.
We mentioned you know, the concerns about the elections. You know, what are some of the complexities that you and the team are navigating with the election? Is it status quo right now because of what, you know, we were talking about earlier, that so much of the unknown, or are there any other ways in which we might be positioning some of our portfolios in lieu of?
A good question. Anthony, yourself and Eddie have hit on some of the points, but I'd like to start off with saying that regardless of who wins and who loses, there's certainly potential to create at least a short-term volatility in the muni market. But we do expect a rebound very shortly after the election. Look, we don't know what will happen in Congress, but we do know the general direction that both Trump and Biden are setting for Congress. Biden is supporting an increase in taxes, on both individuals and corporations. And this will likely increase demand in our asset class where people look for tax-exempt income, right? With Biden, we're also much more likely to see a larger, more meaningful package for state and local governments. And this will be especially helpful to those issuers that Abby and yourself have mentioned, like MTA, like Illinois, that have been severely impacted by the pandemic. And those that were in less than ideal financial shape even prior to the pandemic. We also likely to see a more environmental regulation. Some of these regulations have been rolled back under the current administration, and this could put some modest pressure on electric utilities that have not converted to cleaner sources of energy. We're also expecting the healthcare sector to be better supported, as some of the Affordable Care Act mandates have been rolled back under the current administration. They expect those to come back and support the Affordable Care Act, which has overall been beneficial to the healthcare market. The healthcare market. If Trump wins, we're less likely to see a sufficient rescue package. And where this becomes material is in the airport sector, the mass transit sector, and those local government sectors which have been severely impacted. Those sectors that I mentioned that are operating, it's just a fraction of the capacity where they were last year. At the state and local government levels, taxes are likely to go up even more under the Trump administration without adequate support from the federal government. Under the scenario that Trump wins, we believe it further increases support for the tax-exempt asset class, but this further increases the need for professional credit oversight, given the additional risks that some of the municipalities are going to be faced with without a meaningful rescue package, which we expect not to come from the Trump administration. Thanks, Anthony. I'll pass it back to you and Eddie.
Sure, I'll take over. Go ahead. Thank you. I think that one last thing that I think how we're positioning, and I talked a little bit about where the market is from a curve standpoint and relative to other asset classes, and where we are from a technical standpoint. I just want to reiterate that of all of this, this is one of my favorite phrases, is credit doesn't matter until it matters, and it's the only thing that matters. And I think we're kind of in that position. It is, without question, the most important part of the municipal asset class, both from a fundamental standpoint that Oleg was going through and how we're looking at it, but also it's going to drive the technicals. It's going to drive demand. And if there's fear out there, you're going to see people exit it. And if there's more confidence in it, they're going to come back in. And so I'm back to the data gathering. I will also say that, yes, there are opportunities within it that only can adhere to. There are things where the credits are being punished as though that they really are punished too much. But I want to put it in perspective. We do feel we can have significant alpha in our portfolios due to credit, but it is going to come primarily from what we avoid, not from where the opportunity presents itself. I believe it will be both, but it is more weighted to what we avoid. And please understand for out there, it is not the ones that we believe are going to default, because we are not buy and hold investors. We are total return investors and about performance. And I've said this many times, and I'll say it again, many people in this industry, their line in the sand on credit is default. You know, is the security in the portfolio money good? Our line in the sand is investment grade. How are they going to perform and be really penalized? And that's what Oleg, what I want to make sure is the message we're getting across here. What we're looking at is, how can they potentially perform? As we said, the haves and the have-nots. And if you fall into the perception of have-not, those can be punished very, very severely. And that's what's critical to us, and that's what the ones we want to avoid. So Hopefully this has been helpful. I think now we turn it back to Dan.
Well, Ebi, Anthony, and Oleg, thank you for joining us on the podcast today and for providing some insights into the muni bond markets. And we will, of course, look forward to having you join us again soon.
As a firm providing wealth management services to clients, UBS Financial Services, Inc. offers investment advisory service in its capacity as an SEC-registered investment advisor and brokerage services in its capacity as an SEC-registered broker-dealer. Investment advisory services and brokerage services are separate and distinct, different in material ways, and are governed by different laws and separate arrangements. It is important that clients understand the ways in which we conduct business, that they carefully read the agreements and disclosures that we provide to them about the products or services we offer. A small number of our financial advisors are not permitted to offer advisory services to you and can only work with you directly as UBS broker-dealer representatives. Your financial advisor will let you know if this is the case, and if you desire advisory services, we will be happy to refer you to another financial advisor who can help you. Our agreements and disclosures will inform you about whether we and our financial advisors are acting in our capacity as an investment advisor or broker-dealer. For more information, please review the PDF document at ubs.com/relationship summary.